Welcome to the Daily Apple. I'm your host, Kevin White. Emma Ryan and I will dive into all topics related to the science of longevity, along with some other subjects we just find of interest, with the hopes to provide useful information for everyone. This stems from my personal interest to optimize the human condition, to not just live longer, but to live better. Find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for joining us. Hey, Samuel Bond, welcome.
Appreciate it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, welcome to the Daily Apple. Today we have the almighty and powerful Samuel Bond, DEXA scan guru, that we're going to meet and get his kind of his story a little bit. So, yeah, good to have you, dude.
Appreciate it.
So let's talk about where you're from. Kind of, you're from Oklahoma.
I am. Barely. Small town down south on the border of Oklahoma and Texas, down by Lake Texoma, as you can get the name Texoma.
You're from Texoma?
Yeah. Huh. A little town called Medill. It's, I think I graduated with 80 or so people. Grew up on a farm down there.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of farm?
I mean, we had cattle, horses, goats, you name it.
So did you work the farm? Like, did you have to get up and do chores before you had your breakfast kind of thing?
Absolutely.
Are you serious? What would you do in the morning?
Oh, God. You know, depending on the age of the calves, if we had to bottle feed them or not, you know, it comes in phases, but that or just go get the feed, spread it out, put it in the trough, water, obviously. Their chickens weren't bad. We can just, those are pretty easy. Mm-hmm. They're free ranged. But really just the cattle, just calling them in, feeding them. And then we can take care of ourselves and get ready for the day. And then okay. We go do our.
So let me ask you this. So I mean, being a city boy, raised in a much different, I mean, the majority of my family are out off the farm. And I mean, my dad got off. And so we were, you know, city people. So my cousins would always make fun of me about, you know, city boy, city slicker, all that stuff. But so take me back to you. So it's your kid, let's say you're 12 or 14 or whatever, and it's a school day, maybe it's a cold fall day or whatever. What time is the alarm going off? Are you waking up with a rooster? What does that look like?
Not much alarms going off. Kind of that internal clock, because it's built into you just as being the youngest.
When you're 12 or 13, you're just waking up. At what time do you wake up then?
I mean, there are days that, depending on like phases in life and sports and things like that, where we'd sleep in and have one of the other siblings get up. But when it was your day, it was your day. So, I mean, it was probably up 6:30 or so, getting everything ready. Not super early.
Okay.
Now, the animals are up that early, obviously, the rooster, but we weren't out there giving them any grain until about 6:37, because that gave us enough time to, on the weekdays, to get back in, get ready for school, and then go do our workouts and things like that.
So you say it was, when it was your day, it was your day. So did you and your brothers alternate chores kind of thing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. It's in the morning time. Now, afternoon, it was just based off schedules, who was available.
Yeah.
But
you'd have to get it done.
Somebody had to get it done, or it was not looking good for the future.
Man, you know, if I asked my son to do something like that, well, the first thing he'd say would be no. And the second thing he would say would be, how much are you going to pay me? It's a total different deal, but that's funny.
And it was easier when all three of us, so I have two older brothers, when all three of us had the rotation. But once they left and were in college, it was just me and the dad, and we had the farm at our house, but we also had some acreage up near Ada in a town called Connerville, and that was about an hour drive or so. So we would have to go there multiple times a week just to feed there too. So we'd have early mornings at home, all day school, practice, and then load up and go take care of the cattle in the afternoon. So we had a full day every day, which was a lot, but I mean, it had to be done.
What was your, we'll shift gears. I had no idea. I've known you for how long now? couple years and
a while, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know you're from the town of Medill. That's right. But I didn't know all that. Well, what sports were you big into? Obviously, you were big into sports and stuff. People who are listening now, all five of our listeners, can't see you right now, but you're in some good shape. So what was your thing in high school and all that?
In high school, being from a small town, I did, you know, football, basketball, baseball, track. I did all, basically anything I could do and make time for, but I really excelled in football and baseball were my two main sports that I enjoyed. Football being number one, that's just what I find, I mean, the most fun, competitive. So much so I decided to play in college with that. But my whole family were all sports gurus, and we all chose to play football at the next level. So that's just kind of our way at the home. But
yeah, so football family. Did you studied exercise physiology? Is that what you kind of knew you were going to do in college? Is that where your head was at, or was your head just wherever the world took you?
Both. So I was interested in the body and how it works and how we can optimize yourself to be the best version of yourself. I've always wanted to kind of know how it works and why we should do that. And exercise science was a good way to get my foot in the door with that. And it kind of went hand in hand with playing sports as well. So that's kind of what made my decision to take that major. I was intentionally wanting to go the physical therapy route. But as I was in school and learning about nutrition and resistance training and longevity and things like that, that's when I came more of the exercise physiology side and ways to really promote longevity in one's health.
So when did you get interested? Obviously, we're going to talk about DEXA scan and all that stuff today, and that's kind of your thing.
Mm-hmm.
What was the door that got you interested in DEXA? When were you exposed to it? When were you thinking, okay, this is helpful? And, you know, because you were interested in, you know, in that early on. You know, right now, it seems like over the past year or two, we have people coming in and there's so much more interest in it and so much more
absolutely
information about it. But what was it about you? When did you get interested in it? When were you exposed to it? When you thought it was of value that you wanted to kind of push off your career in that?
I took a class, Applied Exercise Physiology was the name, I believe. And that's when I was introduced to a DEXA scan first. And we did a short study over the course of the semester where we got to do DEXA scans, see the data. And then we all went and did our own lifestyle outside of classroom. So like if we played sports or we played tennis or rock climbing or didn't work out at all, we could see over the semester how our body is adapting to basically our lifestyle. And then when we did the DEXAs at the end of the semester, we were able to kind of track and see like, where is my life taking me based off the small decisions, the small habits over time? How is that going to predict my future, basically? So that's how I was introduced in the DEXA. We really just looked at total weight, fat mass, and lean mass at that point just to see. We'll dive in later about what all you can pull from a DEXA, but that's just mainly what we looked at. And seeing that information pretty early on before anybody really talked about it, it kind of sparked a little light bulb in my brain saying this could really be very vital to people who are kind of stuck in their health or don't know where to start or how to get better. Seeing the data right in front of you is something that can maybe get you over a hump and kind of set you up on a good path. So that was probably 7-8 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Right now you do your mobile unit. You do Bondexa. When did that launch off? When did Bondexa launch off? When did the mobile van kind of get introduced to you? I know you were, and you kind of acquired that.
Being solo, just me and the mobile unit was 2 years ago.
Mm.
So I've been solo on my own 2 years. I worked for a company before that, doing DEXs for about 4 years prior. So all together, I've been doing DEXA scans for about six years now. I've learned more over the last 6 years of just utilizing the DEXA in people's day-to-day habits and lives and fads and plans and resistance training, marathon training, just different training regimens people have and how bodies adapt to certain things and what we learn from that.
Yeah, when you know that data from your body composition, which DEXA is kind of the obvious, you know, the gold standard for that for a multitude of reasons. But when people know that piece of information, don't you find it kind of lights a fire and for them to make some changes? And because you know, you've seen a lot of stories where guys have had a DEXA was kind of questionable, and then 6 months or a year later, they, you know, once they understand what their numbers are and everything, kind of stimulates them to make some alterations, and they have drastic changes, you know, six to 12 months down the road. I mean, you've seen that a bunch, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Now that the DEXA is kind of getting more popular and more people are kind of talking about it, most people that come in will already have like a body composition test done, mm-hmm. whether that's like, you know, the InBody or they get the scale at home, mm-hmm. and they do their measurements and they're like, oh, I'm at 20% body fat. And they're like, okay, now I know what a DEXA is. I'm going to go get this done. Mm-hmm. And then they come on the DEXA and they're at 35% body fat and they're just shook to their core. So I have to deal the news to them like, hey, this is... This is actually where you're at compared to what you're used to, which will change someone's demeanor. I will say that. But again, once they're educated and they understand why and how we get that number, it makes sense. And then that's when we can kind of get on the right path and kind of make a plan for them instead of being lied to.
What's one of the things that, you know, you'll do and they'll be shocked about? I mean, what are some of the surprises that you get whenever you do a DEXA? They're on the thing. It takes all of 10 minutes or less. And then you have to show them this paper and maybe they're angry. Maybe you're breaking out the tissues to wipe the tears. Are there some things that come to mind on that?
I'll just be specific for women. All they hear is fat mass, right? That's where they're honed in on. But when really we need to be focusing on the lean mass. The way the DEXA works to find that percent body fat, we're really looking at lean mass versus your fat mass. And that's when people's jaw drop, when they notice that percentage is definitely higher than what they're used to hearing. But that's because a lot of people who are seeing these results, especially for the first time, they're not really understanding how, I don't want to say under eating, but as far as what we're eating, protein, things like that is so, so low for where they really need to be that once they understand that, that number makes sense to them then. But yeah, a lot of people are shocked by just their total percent body fat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a few of the things I think are most interesting. If I was to take two things that I care about the most on it, and we've talked about that before, is the two things is the visceral adiposity, which we'll talk about later. The, you know, the fat, really where it's at, yeah, and then the bone mineral density, which has been shocking a lot, you know, which we can talk about in a minute.
You never know until you know.
Yeah.
When someone's...
Yeah, that has been absolutely crazy. Sometimes you see people that you'd expect, you know, even a 40-year-old or, you know, somebody younger who's got really bone mineral deficiency, which is a reflection of, you know, nutrient deficiency.
And, yeah, they're basically their lifestyle from...
Which is going to be...
Nature versus nurture. We could talk about that, but I mean...
But before we get into that, how we met was I kind of just reached out to you in the blue when we started our practice. I wanted a DEXA. I thought it was extremely valuable. I just didn't have one yet. I thought, well, and I was looking things up and I thought, oh, here's a guy who's got a mobile DEXA. So we just utilized you to do that stuff for our patients, which was mm-hmm. kind of cool. And whenever you tell somebody there's going to be a guy in a van, you know, that's going to have a text.
If I told you how many jokes I get from that.
Oh, yeah. He's got candy for you, so just get in the van. Don't ask Halloween. Questions. But that's been huge. That's actually a huge thing. You're the only guy doing this stuff that I know of in our location.
Yeah, in Oklahoma for sure.
But once you have this piece of information, it kind of flips a switch that all of a sudden you see what cards you're dealt, what you've, you know, what's under the hood a little bit. And, you know, if we drove our cars without paying attention to, you know, how much oil was in there or, you know, how much gas we had in the tank, we'd have problems. But, you know, we take better care of our cars than we do our people. So you're doing these every day. What are some of the shocking findings? You were just talking before we started recording about a guy.
Oh, yeah. Actually, two in the last couple of weeks. Just the average looking as far as just like weight comes in a mil, probably 35, 36 or so. And we were looking at, we do bone density, total body bone density to get a T and a Z score. And his was -1.6, I believe, something like that. I don't want to say middle age, but on the younger side, right? Mm-hmm. About 30 or so.
Yeah.
And his bone density was shockingly low. And that number, so just to kind of put it in perspective.
Yeah, the Z score.
We want to be, a good score is going to be -1 or above. that's where we really, it needs to be. That's considered good bone density. Higher, the better, obviously, the more dense the bones. Well, was what we're looking for.
So on the Z score, it's kind of like that bell-shaped curve, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the bell-shaped curve of people in your age range, and so zero means you're at the 50th percentile. You're right in the middle of that. So anything positive from that, you know, you're more in the, you know, 75th, 85th percentile. So if you're zero, you're at the 50th percentile.
Correct. So you just, you can look at it that way. Obviously, the range for bone density is -1 and above is still considered good. But that zero mark is like where you want to start for like standard deviation. So anything higher than that is going to be better, or you're going to be more, your bone density is going to be more dense than the average person walking around, which genetics and things like that play a big part in bone density. But again, your lifestyle, the way you're raised until about what age, I would say 26, 27, really kind of gives you your foundation for your bone density, as we're getting older. So basically if genetics were out of the picture and you told me what your lifestyle was like from 10 years old to 30, then we would probably have a pretty good idea of how dense your bones would be compared to the average.
Right. And the important thing on that is it's really valuable, because we've had people that you've done for us in the practice who've been 40 years old, who you wouldn't think anything about it. And maybe they're have 3 pounds of visceral adiposity, that have been surprising that they've been osteopenic and would have never known it. But the important thing about that is knowing at 40, because if you know that at 70, you can do some things to help that, but it's not going to have a rapid, you know, it's not going to be fixed overnight. Right. So that's a lot of nutrient deficiencies, the majority of the population, magnesium deficient, you know, D3, all those sorts of things that are going to help with that. But there's a lot of avenues to get that going, but at 40, it's so invaluable because you can start to change the trajectory there.
Right. Most people I see, I always ask, have you had a bone density test before they come in? And 95% of people are like, nope, I know I should get one, but I haven't. It's just like, well, at least you're here now. Mm-hmm. So we can get that baseline number and then move forward. But now that it's kind of more available to people, I think we'll start to see a lot more people and kind of come up with a game plan for them. But like we said earlier, you don't really know until you get it tested. So, and by the time you kind of know, then it's too late at that point. So get your bone, get a DEXA scan, get your bones checked, if anything else. We can take away the fat part. If you don't want to look at their fat, we can just look at your bones for you.
The other thing that's really shocking and super helpful, let's talk about that visceral adiposity, the VAT score. You know, I'm sure you've seen, I mean, it happens all the time. You'll have a guy that may look good in a suit. You don't think twice about it, but when he's laying there and you get this done, you find, you know, 4 pounds of visceral adiposity. And anyway, do you get surprised on that a lot? Or
yeah, last week at a company I was at, a guy came in. He was about 5'10", 182, actually, I remember, because it shocked me. And so just average guy in clothes, just looks like a skinny, healthy guy. And then we did a scan, and his visceral fat, or his VAT score, we weighed that in pounds, and he had 3.37 pounds of visceral fat. Now, we'll talk about ranges in a second, but that's about a pound and a half over of where we needed to be to kind of knock out those metabolic syndrome risk. So that's just kind of a shocker there. Like, you can be at a good weight, or actually it just kind of shows you how the weight on the scale doesn't really interpret what's going on the inside. So that was the most recent one I've came across, and it kind of surprised me, just because most of the time you'll see someone who is at a lower weight has lower visceral fat, but that's not always the case. And it's better to, kind of like bone density, it's better to get a reading now so we can adapt those little habits that promotes the good lifestyle change.
You know, the reason anybody should care about that visceral adipose tissue is that, and that again is the fat below the chest wall musculature. That's the fat beneath the abdominal wall musculature. It's not your love handles, your pinchable stuff, but it's the inside stuff. But it really changes your immune response to things. I mean, your T cells act different. You have higher inflammation, increases, you know, cell senescence and all these other issues. That's a risk factor for, like you said, metabolic syndrome, which feeds into everything else, like, you know, cancer, cardiovascular disease, and the whole deal. So yeah. If you want to get one thing, you know, that's low hanging fruit, is to focus hard on that and to follow that. But so yeah, it's super important. See it all the time though, where a guy will, or a girl, you know, they have 3 or 4 pounds of body fat. You've done one for us here where I remember the guy, great dude, I remember, and you were like, Kevin, you got to see this. This is a time bomb.
I was nervous for him to just walk to his car. I had to keep an eye on him. But no, all jokes aside, like that's the type of the things we can measure and really get a grip on it before it's too late, because that's just, like he said, a ticking time bomb. Like, you never know when your heart rate gets up all of a sudden and that's it.
There was, we have had people, you know, there are women who maybe a touch overweight or whatever, their, you know, body fat maybe a touch high, or, you know, 30%, but their visceral adipose tissue can be low. And that's, so it doesn't mean that always, you know, if you're overweight, that you're going to have a high visceral adipose tissue, which is great. Those are people that are even much easier to manage.
Since we're kind of on the topic of visceral fat, so some good indicators that your visceral fat might be high, or just to keep a lookout on, is sleep apnea. Okay, so if you struggle with that, or sometimes you don't even know if you're struggling with that. So if you're not sleeping too well and you're kind of feel more fatigued or lethargic throughout the day, that can correlate with high visceral fat. And so really, when we're looking at it, think of it as, the visceral fat is an additional volume, so the fat around your organs. And the more we have, they're crowded, so when we're laying down, they feel smushed and they can't operate as good as they should. So then once we're trying to sleep and relax, they're working overtime, so we're not able to sleep as good as we should. And that can what correlates with a high visceral score.
Yeah.
Almost every time looking at someone's visceral fat, their pounds, I can kind of say you struggle with sleep apnea, yes or no. It's night and day, as they can tell. So keep an eye on that. Obviously, if you get a DEXA scan done and your visceral fat is high, there's definitely ways we can get that down in a quick manner. Now, that's the last fat to go as well. So we'll chip away at it, but it's definitely doable to get it down.
Sleep apnea, if that goes unchecked and you have sleep apnea, if you treat that, your testosterone levels improve, all these other things improve. So guys, erectile dysfunction, all that kind of stuff. If you want to bump up your testosterone, then treat your sleep apnea. Have you ever heard of this Stop Bang? It's a website. It's where you can take this questionnaire. It's like 5 or 6. It's very short, and it'll give you your risk factors for sleep apnea.
No, I haven't.
So you just go to Stop Bang. It's STOP and then BANG. I have no idea where they came up with this name, but it's really correlated well with sleep apnea. How do people find you?
Yeah, you can find me. I have my own website. It's bondexa.com. It's BONDEXA. Or that's the same thing as like my social media is Bondexa. My last name is Bond, by the way, BOND, and then Adexa. So that's how I came up with the name, right? So they share that D is the name of the company. But yeah, you can hopefully find me out, see me driving around, you see the van, website, social media.
Yeah. And you're on the Twitters and the Instagrams and the interwebs.
Yeah, mainly Instagram and Facebook, but
cool. It's been good to have you. Thanks for making time today.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Let's go have some lunch.
Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Apple and Spotify, and please review us to let us know what you think. Thanks.